If Chris Paul wants to go to the Lakers for the tax mid-level at 5'9", God bless him. Right? Like, if he wants to do that, good for him.
Because they don't have the money, right? They don't have the money for him.
They don't have the money, and there's no sign and trade. I mean, the Suns are going to go out and get KCP and Kuzma and a pick in 2028. You're not going to. You'd rather just let it go and kind of use cap space or bring back campaign and stuff like that.
As Bobby Marks on with us today, according to Jordan, our producer, he reiterated exactly the same thing. Was it last night on SportsCenter, this morning on SportsCenter? This morning on SportsCenter. He said the same thing. He's like, man, Chris Paul's not going to the Lakers.
No.
He's not going to the Lakers. But that has not stopped. And it's partly fueled by probably our own paranoia. LeBron James is sitting courtside for Game 5, right? He's there. We know about the relationship between he and Chris Paul. They're banana boat guys. They're friends. They go way, way back. Arsenio Hall, when LeBron was on the show with Arsenio Hall a couple of weeks ago, in what was very much tampering, they asked him about Chris Paul, and he said, oh, yeah, we'd love to have him in the Lakers. Magic Johnson tweets about it as soon as the finals are done.
Shut up, Magic.
Seriously, there's...
Shut up, man. You know, the finals just ended.
And I know technically Magic is not employed by the Lakers. Everybody knows he is acting as an agent for the LA Lakers, right? Whether he's employed there or not. And so there's this kind of building case of... Even though our brains, at least my brain, is telling me Chris Paul's not going to the LA Lakers, he's not leaving the Phoenix Suns, emotionally, whether it's Magic, whether it's LeBron, whether it's this story from the New York Post that you pulled up today,
yep,
man, there's enough talk about it out there that I'm glad my brain is in control of how I feel about this, because if I just kind of gave into it, I might be scared to death Chris Paul's going somewhere. I'm not, but man, enough people are talking about it.
Look,
we have to talk about it for a second.
Yeah, there was a story in the New York Post. Lakers already eyeing Chris Paul after NBA Finals collapse. And they talk about how close Paul is with LeBron James. And this is according to Mark Spears from The Undefeated. And I don't see it. People I've spoken with don't see it. I've spoken with both teams, both the Suns and the Lakers. I think the Lakers are going to get Russell Westbrook, or they're going to get Kyle Lowry. They're willing to trade, you know, Kuzma and Montrezl Harrell when he hops in, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. That'll get him about $36 million in money to be able to trade. So I do see Chris Paul declining the player option, and that's why this is a big conversation. Chris Paul declines the player option, and all of a sudden, he's apparently in play. But I just, man, stranger things have happened. Stranger things have happened. I don't see Chris Paul coming to this situation in Phoenix, getting this young team to the NBA Finals and quitting on them a year later. I just don't see it. I don't think he's that type of guy. I think he likes his role here. I think he's respected. He's a leader. And I think he's going to want to try to do it here. I just don't know that he goes somewhere. I mean, you go want to go to the Knicks? That's not a better situation.
No.
You know, you want to go to the Knicks, you're in the East. You got to deal with Jrue Holiday in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, plus you found a team, and I want to go back on that for a second. You have found a team that is willing to put up with your uniquely you brand of leadership if you're Chris Paul, right? How many times have we said it during this entire postseason? Chris Paul rubs guys the wrong way sometimes. And while that probably wouldn't happen with LeBron James, something you just said a moment ago kind of spoke to me on that. Man, he's found this situation where, and the Willie Green thing officially happened today. Willie Green is frequently cited as a guy by Chris Paul that he really respects and that he's really glad is here. And Willie Green is now the official coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. That was made official today. But the respect he has for Monty, the fact that he chose the Phoenix Suns, right? When he was... Make no mistake, the Suns did not choose Chris Paul. Chris Paul chose the Suns.
Yes.
Chris Paul orchestrated the deal here. So he picks them 1 year, takes them to the finals, and he's going to unpick them the next year? As long as they're willing to pay him relatively what he wants, I just don't know what would have transpired over the 8 months to cause Chris Paul to not want to be here anymore.
The desire to win that elusive title is the only thing. The only thing. He enjoyed his time here. He had fun. He liked it. They liked him. He liked them. They made it to the NBA Finals. Chris Paul's never been in the NBA Finals. One of the great moments is when Chris Paul said something. I can't remember exactly what he said to Monty Williams after they had beaten the Clippers. And there's audio and video out there. He said, you know, I can't believe it, coach. I can't believe it. And, you know, you made it to the finals. Like, he got to play in the NBA finals because of the Phoenix Suns, because of Monty Williams. Okay. James Jones. He's going to give the only thing would be to go. Now, the Knicks aren't closer to a championship than the Suns are, so you'd be stupid to go to the Knicks. The only thing that would make sense is to go join Anthony Davis and LeBron in L.A. That doesn't guarantee you a title, but that may, you might be closer to it. But again, I don't see any scenario in which that happens.
Yeah, I mean, unless the Lakers are somehow able to clear all that cap space for him, but then they'd have to take cap space back in exchange for trading the KCPs of the world, right? The Montrezl Harrells of the world. They'd have to take cap space back. Chris Paul's just opting out and signing with the LA Lakers. They don't have the money to pay him the $44 million. And again, I get it. I get the desire to be close to a championship, closer to his family. They live in LA. He and LeBron are friends. I understand all of that. But again, this is a situation Chris Paul handpicked, and it worked out better than anybody could have hoped for. As long as the Suns are willing to pay him what he wants, maybe he would look at the Lakers and go, yeah, but they're closer and I got to get me that ring. And maybe that would drive him to want to go there and make pennies compared to what he is.
You know what nobody's taken into account here?
Hmm.
I mean, do we not understand that James Jones is going to put together a better roster this year than what he had next year than what he had this year? You don't like there are Bobby Marks, somebody, Ramona Shelburne said it yesterday. What a destination Phoenix is.
Sure.
Okay, the Suns are going to have better talent next year than what they have this year. They're going to get some better players. There's going to be a couple of guys that come here on minimum contracts. You're going to be like, that guy could help.
Yeah.
So they're going to get more length. They will have a backup center with length next year. They'll do those. So the Suns will be in a better spot next year than they are even this year.
I keep saying it, and I'll continue to say it. I understand there's a lot of noise out there about this. Man, Gambo, I worry about a lot of stuff. I'm not worried about this. I'm really
no, you're not.
I'm not
sweating it.
I'm not sweating whether Chris Paul's going to go to the LA Lakers or whether he's not going to be on the Suns. Bobby Marks spoke about it to us yesterday, wrote about it yesterday as well, suggesting that a compromise for Paul and the Suns would be for him to decline that $44 million option,
yep,
but then sign a new three-year deal worth somewhere around $100 million. He would more than double the amount of guaranteed money he has coming his way for the last 3 years of his contract. And then by signing a new three-year deal, he could make far, far less in the first year and give the Suns some flexibility to be able to bring back a campaign, right? To be able to do some of the other things financially that they would want to do. As far as how he played in the postseason, Bobby Marks told us, and I think we kind of agree, CP3 just looked kind of tired out there.
I just thought Chris wore down. I don't know if it was because of Tucker or Drew Holiday defensively. I thought he looked tired. Certainly there was a stretch last night where he had it going that, you know, gave you that lead. But I thought when he got to 77-77, I think there was two mid-range shots in a row that he had missed, and that kind of, you know, gave them a little bit more separation. And I think since game two, he looked like a tired player.
Your New York Post story suggested other names. You mentioned Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, let's go over
and your expectation there. There were other names that were in there. The talk maybe of a sign-and-trade with Dennis Schroeder and perhaps sending him back to Washington in exchange for Russell Westbrook as a possibility that's been mentioned. Other point guards up for free agency this summer include Mike Conley of the Jazz. You mentioned Kyle Lowry. He's a free agent. Goran Dragic is a free agent this year. Lonzo Ball will be a restricted free agent. You can even, if you want to, bet on these point guards that are on the Lakers' radar and who might end up with L.A. Do you know who the odds-on favorite is for them to land in free agency?
It should be Kyle Lowry.
It's not Kyle Lowry.
And then it should be Russell Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on that list.
Well, then this list is wrong. Who's number one?
Patty Mills. Goran Dragic is 2. Austin Rivers is 3. Derrick Rose is 4. Westbrook is 5. Chris Paul is 6. Coming in at 5-1 odds and a +500. Again, these are just names that are out there kind of floating around.
Okay, I'm just going to ask you just a quick question. Chris Paul does leave for some reason. I don't think he will. You don't think he will. Is there anybody on that list you want? Conley, Lowry, Dragic, Ball. I'll take Kyle Lowry.
I wouldn't mind Mike Conley.
Worry about his injuries. He did have a good year, but I do worry about the injuries he's had with those Achilles.
Yeah, I mean, they used to say the same thing about Chris Paul, too, and he's been remarkably durable the last couple of years. Kyle Lowry, I think, would become the very closest to replicating what you had with Chris Paul.
Yeah, he's 35 years old. You know, you just get another veteran point guard who's old and is still pretty good.
Yeah. Would that be the name for you?
If they lost him, I would want to keep the championship window open as much as I could, and I think Lowry could help.
The NFL taking a hardline stance when it comes to games being affected by the COVID virus, and one star Cardinals player has taken to social media to voice his unhappiness over it. The top story of the day, we'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. In a since-deleted tweet that, as Gambo so astutely pointed out when we talked about this in the 2 o'clock hour, is never really deleted as long as somebody takes a picture of it. It's out there, always, for all time. DeAndre Hopkins, verified Twitter account, Cardinals wide receiver. Never thought I would say this, he tweeted, but being put in a position to hurt my team because I don't want to partake in the vaccine is making me question my future in the NFL. That was a tweet in response to a memo that was sent by the league today to all 32 member teams that basically said, in 2021, if your team is not able to play a game because of a COVID outbreak among your unvaccinated players, you will forfeit that game. It will count as a loss. We're not going to reschedule it.
Wow.
We're not going to move it.
Blow you away when you saw
that? Yes, it did. It blew me away.
Because we've never seen that.
No.
We saw the Yankees just a couple of days ago, not enough players to play in a baseball game because of COVID. We've seen it in, you know, with the Miami Marlins. We've seen it in college football. We've seen the ASU couldn't play 3 weeks in a row. We didn't see forfeits of games.
No. Nope.
But this is the first time that I know of where, hey, you can't play, you lose.
And basically, what's changed is obviously the availability of the vaccine and the ability of its players to get vaccinated against this. And while the league can't and won't come out and mandate that its players get vaccinated, it certainly can do things like this that send a very clear message. It is our preference, our strong preference, that you do get vaccinated because we're trying to protect our product. Our product is that every Sunday afternoon, hundreds of millions of people tune in to watch our games. We make money off of that. We all make money off of that. We can't have a situation like last year where the product was in jeopardy because of a bunch of outbreaks. You don't want to get vaccinated? Don't get vaccinated. We can't tell you to do it.
No, you can't.
And they're not.
You cannot.
But they're basically saying there's ramifications. Here's Mike Garofolo on the NFL Network. And just listen to the reaction of the guy that he's on with on the NFL Network when he kind of breaks down how this is all going to go.
The long and short of this is that the NFL in this memo is stating that they are intending to play the entire regular season over 18 weeks, and there will not be a 19th week. So if you get outside of that week and, hey, we couldn't make it work and we couldn't reschedule it, that game is forfeited. The team that had the issue, they lost. The other team, they win, it counts towards the playoffs, all that stuff. That is the long and short of this memo. But there still could be games that are kind of slid around. They will take into consideration many things as far as whether it's safe to allow that game to be played. Stadium availability will factor into that as well, as will competitive advantage, disadvantage, because you could have a team, let's say you push that game back to a Monday or a Tuesday, and then the other team's got a short turnaround or whatnot. So these are all be factors.
Okay, one more. Nobody gets paid if the game is
either
canceled.
Either team.
If the game's not played, it's not just the team that caused the outbreak. Both teams would not be paid their Paragraph 5 salary, their base salary, that installment for that game. So even if it's the team, I mean, you remember teams were upset last year. Hey, it's their problem, and we're rescheduling this game, and we're moving this game around, and it's inconveniencing us. Yeah, well, on top of that, you're not going to get paid if it's the other team that creates the mess.
This is absolutely fascinating. It's almost like you're putting player against player. Dude, if I don't get paid because you're not vaccinated, I'm going to be pissed. The whole team's going to be pissed. Imagine I lose a paycheck because you didn't get vaccinated. Now, look, I rarely admit this. I got vaccinated.
Yeah.
I did the volunteer. I got vaccinated. But I think people should be able to make their own choice. I have family members that aren't vaccinated. If you don't want to get vaccinated, it's your body. It's your choice not to get vaccinated. If DeAndre Hopkins doesn't want to get vaccinated, I'm cool with that. Don't get vaccinated.
Don't get vaccinated. I don't disagree with that at all. I also think it's the NFL's prerogative to be able to say, this is how important this is to us, and this is what we're going to mandate. I think it's it's different because it's on a much larger scale. But anybody who's listening to our show right now, if you are working in an office, okay, I would imagine your office has rules, restrictions, guidelines in place. You might even work.
We do.
And I don't want to specifically say what those are, but yes, we do.
We do.
And we have some very specific, if you are, then this, and if you're not, then this. And I imagine it's like that in every office place in America right now for people who are back at work. What the NFL has done here is essentially no different. If you are, then this. If you're not, then this. And those are all choices that we make every single day when we go work. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. But there is, listen, I mean, there are plenty of, Jay Williams was vaccinated and came down with COVID.
Of course.
So what happens if a percentage of the people that were vaccinated come down with COVID? Hey, I got vaccinated. So okay. You're not going to pay them?
It's funny that you said that.
I mean, is there something
so
about that?
I copied a bunch of tweets from Tom Pelissero. I believe he was the first one who reported this morning. And so give me a minute to look for what I'm looking for.
Yeah, because my thing would be, what if five guys, what if a bunch of players who were, because it could happen. You could get the vaccine and come down with COVID. Okay, it is. Like, it's supposed to prevent you from going to the hospital and having, you know, more serious conditions, but you can still get it.
Here's the line from the memo. If a club cannot play due to a COVID spike in vaccinated individuals, we will attempt to minimize the competitive and economic burden on both participating teams.
So no real answer.
No answer.
Just we'll address it
if it comes up. If it's among vaccinated individuals,
right,
we will address
it. Hey, we can't play a game
up
because 10 of our vaccinated players got COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, not the
because
guy,
people
like,
who get vaccinated can get it.
Course,
I mean, it's of course
it happens all the time.
You get a flu shot, you can get the flu. I mean,
yes,
it happens all the time. So the NFL is just like every office place in America, trying to protect its product by coming up with restrictions and rules. Nobody's making you. No one's saying you must. No one's saying you can't. The league is, and I'll tell you know who else isn't? The NFL Players Association. They released a statement in which they basically said, we remind you, these same basic rules applied last year. The NFLPA noted in a memo to its players, if games were missed last year because of a COVID outbreak, nobody was going to get paid. Basically, the same rules applied because the NFLPA also kind of wants its players to get vaccinated because they want to protect their investment, too.
We got an update from DeAndre Hopkins. He just tweeted about a minute ago, by the way, I got about 9 more years in me. You all have a good day, with the emoji of the face wearing the sunglasses.
Okay.
What does that mean?
That basically means
he's not retiring.
Anybody who thinks I'm retiring over this, I'm not. I've got 9 years left to me. And nobody ever thought he was going to, but you read that tweet, and it comes across like a, man, I don't know if I want to be in this league kind of thing.
You don't want people telling you what to do. You just don't. Listen, I got vaccinated, but if I decided, I don't want people telling me I have to do this. But I think that what you're going to see is you're going to be like, okay, if you're not vaccinated, you can't go into this arena. You can't go to the sporting event. You can't go into this store. You can't travel to this country. I don't like that. I don't like that. I'm not in favor of that. I chose to get vaccinated. I did a lot of homework on it. I spoke to a lot of people on it. You know, my daughter, who's a doctor, I spoke to her about it, and I decided to get the vaccine, okay? But other people don't. If DeAndre Hopkins doesn't want to get the vaccine, I mean, that's his choice. He's got to do what he can to protect himself. The question is, I mean, should he be punished, you know, for it? If he gets ends up with COVID, does he get punished for it? For, you didn't get the vaccine, so now you're going to lose a paycheck.
His team might get punished
for
it.
The whole team may get punished for it.
Do you blame the NFL for wanting to protect their product?
I mean, but people may decide that they don't want to get it for their own personal reasons that they don't want to get it.
I'm not denying that. I'm just saying the NFL, everyone's got a choice to make, and the NFL's making a choice to protect their product, too.
I understand.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, we turn our attention back to the Suns. The future is bright here in Phoenix. How much of that optimism is due to the presence of one guy, Monty Williams? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo show. Still getting a little separation from the events of the last 2 days. Suns lose game 6 of the NBA Finals to the Milwaukee Bucks. The season is over. We turn our thoughts to the offseason, keeping this team together, all of the money. But at the core of it is the second year done of Monty Williams' leadership as the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, and what a 2 years it's been. And joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, as he wrote a really good piece about it on theringer.com, Paulo Ugedi, who joins us here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Paulo, I'm Dave. This is Gambo. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me. Hope you're having a good day.
We are. I got to ask you real quick, if memory serves, were you the gentleman who asked Monty about what he likes to do in between games, and he countered by asking you if you work for boring.com? Was that you?
That was exactly me. Yep. Yep. Monty dished it back a little bit. You know, I think people kind of took it a little out of context because, I mean, you guys have dealt with Monty. He's not a mean-spirited
guy.
Oh,
yeah.
You know?
No, yeah.
Kind of, you know, tongue in cheek, but it was a really fun moment. And afterward, he gave a great answer too.
Oh yeah, it was. I know he didn't mean it mean spirited. I think I even saw that you might have changed your Twitter bio for about a day that you write for boring.com, or you at least suggested on Twitter that you should write for boring.com. I enjoy all the stuff on The Ringer, so it's definitely not boring. You wrote a great piece about Monty, and basically the crux of it is the future is bright as long as Monty's the head coach of this team. From your perspective, what has he meant as part of everything that's gone on around here the last couple of years, Paulo?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I went into the piece kind of looking at, you know, I'd been in Phoenix for the games that were there, and it struck me that, you know, Monty is kind of the ideal coach, not just for the Suns team, but I feel like for teams in this NBA age in general, you know, he seems like he really connects with each player on their at whatever level they're at, and then is able to kind of rally everybody around the cause, you know, around winning. And obviously, you know, they didn't end up winning the series, but there were a lot of things that stood out to me in the way he answered questions, the way he talked to players. And I think, you know, that was kind of confirmed to me when I talked to Nate McMillan, who was the coach that gave Monty his first assistant job in Portland back in 2005. Nate was talking about how when Monty went into that situation, he was also looking to change the culture and connected with each guy at whatever they needed. So the connection, the full circle connection, kind of stood out to me. And just the way Monty seems to approach not just coaching, but life in general, I think is something that is unique perhaps amongst NBA coaches, and specifically to the Suns team. I think the results speak for themselves in how he's shifted the culture and how he's gotten them on the right track.
Yeah, a lot of things took place in shifting that culture. You know, the best practice facility now in the NBA, getting that was a big deal. You know, James Jones being the GM, you know, and the relationship between him and the players. But hiring Monty was probably the biggest one. And I think the most important thing is what you want out of a coach is you want a leader of men. And I think what we've established here with Monty in this short amount of time that he's been here, he is absolutely a leader of men. And I'm not sure you could say that about all the coaches that, you know, had been here before that. But he's a leader, and these players follow Monty.
Well, I also think, you know, I think if you look across the league, there are a lot of opening coaching gigs this offseason, and they've been filled by former players. And there's been a more, you know, perhaps a shift towards looking at the former player as the best person for the job. And I feel like Monty kind of strikes that balance between, you know, connecting with players, but also being, like you said, kind of that leader that they need. Because you obviously, you know, there's so many different types of coaches, and everybody's dealing with their own situation. But it really feels like he's the right guy for this particular job. And, you know, obviously, more broadly speaking, coaches, especially in the NBA, I mean, they can only go as far as their superstars take them. But as far as having that position solidified and having somebody that might not just be able to lead this team, but also perhaps convince other players to come, you know, attract other players just by the way the culture has shown to be attractive. I think that's a huge thing for the Suns going forward.
Yeah, Paulo Ugedi from TheRinger.com, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. He's got a really terrific piece on The Ringer right now about Monty Williams with some Nate McMillan quotes and just about Monty's impact and what it's meant here. Something I want to go back to that you talked about, his ability to kind of relate to every single type of player seems to be especially highlighted with the Phoenix Suns. You've got the veteran in Chris Paul. You've got the younger players in Ayton and Booker and Bridges. And every single guy on every single roster, there's just different ways to go about pushing their buttons. Would you agree that that's one of the things that Monty has been especially good at, is kind of cracking the code on each individual guy and knowing that it's not universal? There's not one code for every single player in the NBA.
Definitely. No, I think another thing with him that contributes to that is the fact that, you know, he's talked about the fact that Greg Popovich, you know, who mentored him a little bit, had told him to just be himself. And I think for Monty, being himself is being relaxed, being self-deprecating, poking fun at himself, being able to relate to these guys, I'm trying to be cool, you know, with the younger crowd kind of way, but just in the more like, hey, like, I'm a human being. I recognize what you're going through, and, you know, let's motivate everybody and do this together. So I think there's a self-deprecating aspect to his approach that seems to resonate with players. And I think it's clear he doesn't really have a big ego. I mean, every time somebody would ask about something he did, he would credit somebody else or say, you know, you're giving me too much credit. And I think that plays into how he's hired the right staff around him to help him help the players and help the team go forward, which I think is another big aspect of why they succeeded this season.
Now that the Suns have had success, well, I think we're all looking forward to seeing what that veteran player who's going to sign a minimum deal does. Usually the veteran player on a minimum contract picks somewhere where he could go to win. If there's five teams interested, where do I have the best chance to win? Where do I have the best chance to get playing time? I want to see if Monty has an impact there, because the Suns have a chance to win, and if they're able to offer some playing time, it's possible that some of these, you know, veteran minimum guys look at the Suns situation and say, I'd like to play for Monty. He's a good coach to play for. That could happen as early as this year in free agency.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. I also think, you know, having Chris there, you know, depending on what happens with Chris, that might have a trickle-down effect too. But I think there's, you know, Monty doesn't really strike me as a recruiter per se, in to that sense of the word, but he does strike me as somebody who, you know, if James Jones, you know, calls him up and says, hey, we're looking at this guy and he's considering signing here, do you want to talk to him and kind of sell him on what you're doing here? He feels like the perfect type of guy to get on the phone with you and tell you like why you need to come to Phoenix and why you need to be a part of what they're building. And obviously some of that stuff, you know, it's hard to quantify. It's not, you know, it's not something you can put, you know, on a box score or anything like that. But I think it's something that definitely could happen this offseason and going forward as well.
I don't know how much to oversell this, undersell this, but today it was made official in that Willie Green, the Suns' assistant coach, is going to be the new coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. It's often the price of the kind of success that the Suns have had. From your perspective, how much is that going to impact anything, if at all, what goes on in that coach's office when they're getting ready for this upcoming season?
Well, I think to go back to the previous question, it's almost like it's a highlight for Monty, I would say. And when he was asked about it, he treated it as such. You know, he raved about Willie and it. And, you know, he was that guy once, right? The guy who was an assistant and then, you know, because of success, was able to take a head coaching gig. And so I think he looks at it as a point of pride, and it might even be the type of thing where another assistant who's also good looks at, you know, that situation and says, oh, well, maybe this can be a stepping stone too. I think that's just the reality of the NBA. As far as to how much he's going to be missed, I mean, it seems like he had a big hand in not just helping, you know, Chris Paul get there, but also in developing the player like campaign and really with all the guys. So I think it's just about finding a replacement that still has that kind of mentality that Monty has, which I don't think he'll have much issue in replacing him.
Yeah. Paolo, we appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on with us. Very good article. We enjoyed reading it. We enjoyed talking with you about it. Thanks for the time.
Thank you guys for having me.
You got Paolo Ughetti joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Cadillac Tempe. Experience the difference at Coulter Cadillac Tempe. .com. Do want to remind you, football season is here. Rookies reporting to Cardinals training camp today. Veterans reporting next week. We're getting you ready with the Valley Virtual Series Training Camp Edition. Text the word CAMP to 62620. Get a link to this exclusive event where you will hear from your favorite Arizona sports host and you'll have the chance to win prizes like tickets or autographed memorabilia. Text the word CAMP to 620620. Arizona Sports Valley Virtual Series. It's presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. It's inevitable. The Suns roster will look different next season. Who's back? Who's not? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, live from the Octane Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Season is done for the Phoenix Suns, and now the offseason, and there's not a lot of time to sit around and talk about what's going to happen in the offseason before you just kind of roll up your sleeves and get to work if you're the Phoenix Suns. The draft is 1 week from today. Free agency, I believe, starts on August 6th. So you're talking
I'm
about
not ready.
2 weeks. That's, you know what?
I'm just not ready for the draft.
Yeah, join the club.
Good thing they're picking, what, 29th?
Yeah, 29th.
Yeah, because nobody's going to care.
No, I mean, it's no, they're not. And that's fine. I mean, look, in the past, we put a lot of our hopes and dreams into the NBA draft. It's refreshing that we don't have to this year. It's refreshing that we don't have to look upon the draft as our savior. And who are they going to get? And what are they going to do? And is that guy going to play? And it's kind of nice to not have to worry about it.
Right.
Doesn't mean we won't cover it. Doesn't mean we won't talk about it. I saw a mock draft today that suggested Josh Christopher, the ASU player, could be in play at number 29 for the Suns. I don't know if that's true or not. It's just I started doing a little prep work for
they
that.
They can't trade the pick, but they could trade the rights to the player they select. So they can't trade the pick. So for people wondering, oh, can they just trade the pick? No, I mean, kind of they can, right? They could select the player and then trade the rights to that player to another team, but they can't trade the pick before the draft.
Okay, so but they could pick a player for a team
basically,
on the
yeah,
draft,
basically,
right?
And then, yeah, they're kind of that trade for Chris Paul kind of tied up a lot of their, you know, their ability to make trades of first round picks until 2027.
They're locked in until that pick that they owe Oklahoma City conveys,
yes.
And until it conveys, that they're really not allowed to trade any of their first round inventory until it conveys. But there are. It does sound like there's a little bit of a workaround, perhaps, if they're a player that they're drafting for another team. Anyway, the draft is a week. Free agency's coming up soon. I know the big date for Chris Paul, I believe, is August 1st. I think that's the day where he has to decide whether he's opting in, whether he's opting out. But look, we all know what's at stake this offseason for the Phoenix Suns. We all know kind of the decisions to be made. Chris Paul, what is he going to decide? And then what are the Suns going to decide? DeAndre Ayton, do you max him out this offseason? Do you offer him a contract just below the max, hoping he takes it? Mikal Bridges, how much is he worth? There are others beyond those three. Those are the three biggies. Those are the three I imagine we're going to spend a lot of time talking about, but they're not the only ones. Campaign is a big decision this offseason.
Yeah, he made, you know, basically the veterans minimum, $1.9 million. The Suns have nine players under contract next year. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre, Jay Crowder, Dario, Mikal Bridges, Jalen Smith, Cam Johnson, and Javon Carter. The players that are not under contract for next season, each one more, Langston Galloway, Cameron Payne, Abdul Nader, Frank Kaminsky, Torrey Craig, Damian Jones, Tyshawn Alexander. So, you know, nine guys under contract and a bunch of guys not. The biggest one out of that group, each one more, Langston Galloway, Payne, Nader, Kaminsky, Craig. The biggest one is Cameron Payne. You have a good backup point guard. That's a hard thing to find in the NBA as a quality backup point guard. You have one. You have a quality backup point guard, and you're going to want to keep him. But the cost could be high. You're not going to get him for $2 million. You're probably not going to get him for $5 million. It's somewhere probably between $7 and $10 million to keep Cameron Payne. But if you're going to add money for DeAndre and add money for Mikal and Chris Paul and, you know, all of these things that happen, you know, that's you've got to factor that in. I think they're in a good spot salary-wise, but they might have to pay the luxury tax this year if they want to keep the band together.
They might have to do that. We had Bobby Marks on yesterday. We asked him about Payne, and here's what he said.
I don't think he's a starter. I think the role in Phoenix is perfect, where he's playing maybe 20 to 25 minutes. Is there a team out there like New York, if they miss out, that's sitting on a boatload of cap space, will go out and pay him $13 to $14 million? I think that's still kind of rich. I think his number is a little bit north of that mid-level, which is what Phoenix can pay, right around like $10.5, $10.6 million. So I think that's kind of where his number is. I think there's a difference when you go from a sixth man or seventh man to the, you know, your starter. You're an everyday starter, and I think the productivity probably drops a little bit here. So yeah. I think you do have to be careful in that regard.
Now, as Bobby Marks pointed out, we had him on our show yesterday, and as he pointed out on ESPN.com, in some ways, Paul and Payne are tied together in that if Payne were to opt out of his $44 million next year.
Paul.
If Paul were to opt out, thank you. If Paul were to opt out and then sign back in for 3 years and $100 million, he could take a lot less than $44 million in year one, knowing he's going to make that up in guaranteed money in years two and years three, and that might give you the freedom to financially bring back Cameron Payne if you wanted to, right? I mean, if Paul comes back next year at $44 million, it's going to be tough to bring back Payne and not go into the tax. But if Payne opts out, or if Paul opts out, signs a three-year deal, he could make whatever in year one, and that might give you the freedom to bring back Payne. So let's use Payne as our launching point for this conversation.
Okay.
Do you think Cameron Payne will be back next year, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that he has a lot of value on this team, but he's going to want to get paid. He hasn't been paid yet in the NBA. He's going to want to get paid. It's possible he goes to whatever, you know, to whoever has the most amount of money. But we brought up before, there's a lot of point guards that could be out there, right? Russell Westbrook, Kyle Lowry, Mike Conley, Goran Dragic, and so on. There are a lot of point guards that could move. If somebody values Payne as a starter, then I think the Suns are out of it. If somebody says, hey, I think you're a starter, because then you're going to pay him starting money.
Yeah.
So that's what you're hoping for. You're hoping that nobody in the league says, Cameron Payne's my starting point guard next year. I don't think anybody will, but that would be the only thing that would make me feel like, okay, you can't get him.
I would worry that some team would look at Cameron Payne and think he could compete to be their starter. Hey, we're going to give you a chance to be our starter. We're going to bring you in and maybe you're our starter. And that combined with the money, because he knows he's not going to be a starting point guard on this team. That's why I suspect he's probably going to be gone, because I think that team might offer him that opportunity. I just have a funny feeling he's going to end up being gone, because I think this is his one chance to grab the money in his career, and I have a hard time believing he's not going to do it. All right, so Cameron Payne.
Okay.
Torrey Craig.
I think you let him go.
Do you?
I think you let him go and you prioritize getting yourself a veteran, lengthy backup center. A veteran. These wings, in some ways, you could keep either Nader or Craig. Who wants to come back at the veterans minimum again? You know, you could keep one of the two. You don't have to keep both of them, in my opinion. You keep one of the two, Nader or Craig. If you let them both go, you could get somebody else. These wings, these veteran wings could be had on the cheap. But you've got to find yourself more length. And we learned that in the Milwaukee series. It really came into play. And it could have came into play against the Lakers if they were healthy. But you need to get some more length behind DeAndre. So I'm prioritizing a backup center with length to help when DeAndre's in foul trouble, when DeAndre's not playing well, when you just, you know, when you need length, that you got it. That's got to be a priority.
I like what Torrey Craig brought to the roster this year. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't think he's back next year. Frank Kaminsky.
Gone.
I agree.
He's okay, and he actually played well in game six. He did play well in game. But his inability to really give you anything defensively is just not the way that James Jones wants to build teams.
He's okay on a Tuesday night against Cleveland in February. On a Saturday night against Milwaukee in the game final, in the NBA finals, he's just not an option. And he did. He played well in game six. I don't want to completely disparage him. He surprisingly played well. He just really wasn't much of an option. I think he's a fine regular season player. I just don't think he's a guy that really serves much of a function on a postseason roster for the most part. So I have no problem with him being gone. Real quick, Etuan Moore.
Gone.
Agree. Langston Galloway,
gone.
Yeah, I think a lot of those guys, I think it really comes down to Nader, Craig, Payne, and I think you're right, keeping one of Nader or Craig and letting the other one walk, and then I think you just kind of rebuild your bench after that. Cameron Payne, I just don't know.
You've got a chance to see what the playoffs are all about. What do you think you need? What do you think you need more of? Look, Nader was hurt, but, you know, and Torrey Craig played a little bit, but you know, Langston Galloway and Etuan Moore barely played. They barely played. Etuan Moore got a little bit of time, I think, you know, when Chris Paul was out. But, you know, you may look for a more versatile guard. You might look for somebody that's a little more versatile that could play a guard spot for you.
DeAndre Hopkins is not happy about the NFL's new rules when it comes to COVID. But similar rules might be coming to the Pac-12 as well. We'll fill you in on the details next on the Burns and Gambo Show.